This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Feedback, written by Dennis E. Taylor, performed by Ray Porter. Feedback by Dennis E. Taylor. Professor Jack Jackson stared at the whiteboard, momentarily at a loss for words. A tiny corner of his mind acknowledged the irony that the work that was so boggling to him was his own. He carefully placed the marker pen on the ledge, as if worried it would shatter if he moved too fast. "And you've checked this." His friend and colleague, Professor Malcolm Chang, stood with his hands behind his back, examining the contents of the whiteboard with no outward display of emotion. The only indication of his excitement was an occasional rise onto his toes before rocking back onto his heels. "Double, triple, and quadruple. If there's an error, it's right at the conceptual level, and I can't see it." Jack waved a hand at the board. "This says time travel is not only theoretically possible, but possible without requiring infinite energy."
"Or negative mass. Always a plus."
Malcolm gave Jack a small smile.
"Nevertheless, you should get it double-checked before going public."
"Be my guest."
Malcolm laughed. "Not me. I've never been able to keep up with you on the theory side. I'm more of an experimental physics kind of guy."
He paused and glanced at the rack on which was perched something that looked like a stubby torpedo.
"So this thing might actually work?"
Jack hesitated. "Well, that's what the equations say, but I'm scared to jinx it."
"Wow, and you call yourself a scientist?"
Jack grinned back. "I stand by my statement."
"So you're going to confirm all this, right?"
Malcolm gestured at the whiteboard.
"That seems prudent. Not that the universe will be destroyed if I goofed. It'll more likely just emit a puff of smoke. The device, I mean, not the universe.
Who would you suggest?"
"Well, you are married to the chair of the math department."
Jack was unable to suppress a smile. He'd had strikingly bad luck with women until Professor Diane Keeling had joined the university a year ago. They'd married after a whirlwind 10-month courtship that still left him breathless. He caught himself twirling the wedding ring on his finger and self-consciously pulled his hand away. The presence of the wedding band still gave him goosebumps.
I guess I do have some pull with the math department. I'll talk to her, but her schedule is up to here right now."
Jack placed the knife edge of his hand against his forehead. "So it might be a few days." Professor Diane Keeling stepped back from the whiteboard, one hand tapping the felt marker into her other palm.
"Nothing wrong with any of this. At least from a pure math point of view."
She turned to the two men.
"I'm sure there's something major behind this. I can see Jack vibrating like an overcaffeinated squirrel from over here. Don't think I can't see it, bud. Want to spill?"
Malcolm glanced at Jack and chuckled.
"So that's what that buzzing was."
Jack gave him an arch look before replying.
It's a theoretical model for, time travel device."
Diane laughed, then cut it off when no one else joined in. She glanced back and forth at the two men.
"Okay, how theoretical? Can this be translated to the real world?"
Malcolm replied with a mysterious smile, then motioned for her to follow him. Diane cocked her head, examining the device on the rack. It resembled nothing so much as a cartoon version of a bomb, right down to the fins.
"This is a time machine," Jack finished for her.
"It can only go into the past, and only to existing receiving equipment, so we can't send it into the distant past, just to the point where we built the receiving rack."
He gestured to an empty rack at the other end of the lab.
"The device itself contains a counter to keep track of how many times it's jumped, plus a converted dash cam so we can record audio and video, attached to a 4-terabyte hard disk. It also automatically syncs up with its past self over Wi-Fi on arrival, so we never lose any telemetry."
"It looks like a bomb."
Jack and Malcolm both laughed.
"Like from a Looney Tunes cartoon?"
Malcolm said.
"Yeah, we've taken to calling it the time bomb. Diane rolled her eyes.
Of course you have. Have you tested it?
Jack smiled, embarrassed.
Really, we should have waited for you to check the math first, but I figured if I'd gotten something wrong, it would just not work, rather than, you know...
Destroying the universe, Malcolm supplied.
So that's a yes, then, Diane said. And what happened?
We tested it twice, Jack said. Sent it back 2 minutes. Straightforward test, no funny business. The dash cam recorded the jump, and of course, the cam's clock ended up out of sync with the rest of the world. We've connected its Wi-Fi to the internet now so it can get NTP updates. Malcolm jumped in.
It was a lot of trouble to get the timing right. We had to make sure we sent the device at just the right time so that it would arrive when it actually did, so we decided to set up a random timer to do the actual launch.
And it showed up before it left?
Diane frowned in thought.
Doesn't that violate some basic law of physics? For 2 minutes, there's more mass in the universe. Then you destroy that mass. That's only if you consider it in terms of four-dimensional space-time. In the 12 dimensions in which the universe actually exists, the total mass is constant. It just moves around.
Jack gestured at the whiteboard.
According to that, anyway. Ah, right. Have you tried not sending it after receiving it?
Nope, still worried about destroying the universe.
Not unreasonable.
Diane sauntered over and rested her hand on Jack's shoulder, and he placed an arm around her waist. Or thereabouts.
Watch it, Buster, she said.
Jack chuckled and moved his hand up a few inches.
Want to see a demo? Show me.
Jack and Malcolm began bustling around, preparing the system. Malcolm flipped open a laptop on the lab bench and fired up a browser. Then he stopped and pulled his head back in obvious consternation.
What the...
He turned the laptop toward Jack.
Software problem with the counter. It says we've launched the time bomb 63 times.
We'll check it out later,
Jack replied.
Just reset it.
Malcolm clicked a few buttons, then said,
Ready.
Jack reached out and flipped a prominent toggle switch situated at the front of the sending rack, and a red light came on.
That activates the timer, which does the actual launch after a short random interval. The time bomb will appear on the receiving rack, then disappear from the sending rack a short time after that. Wait, that's it? You flip a switch?
Jack frowned.
What were you expecting? Time tunnel special effects?
We turn on the timer and it jumps after some short, random... At that moment, a second bomb identical to the device in front of them appeared on the receiving rack.
There you go, Jack said. And in a few seconds?
Diane reached out, without warning, and flipped the timer switch to off.
What are you doing?
Jack frantically reached for the switch just as the original bomb disappeared. Malcolm frowned.
That was weird. The timer was off.
I turned it off, right?
Diane said.
It shouldn't have jumped, right? I mean, you can turn off the timer before it jumps, right? That's correct. Yet it jumped.
Jack glanced at Malcolm, who was now glaring thunderously at the rack. The rack was his design, so he was doubtless personally offended by the equipment's behavior.
We should check the equipment, all of it, not just the timer.
Tomorrow, Diane said. We'll be late if you guys spend any more time on this.
Dinner at La Cantina had become a Friday night tradition for Diane, Jack, Malcolm, and Sandra, one of the engineering profs and a good friend of Diane's. Jack privately thought that Diane might be trying to set Sandra up with Malcolm, although she would deny it whenever he asked. Sandra was a beautiful, intelligent woman, but she could be a little intimidating. According to Diane, Sandra was keenly affected by her continued celibacy. He understood completely, remembering his years of short and unfulfilling relationships. Diane was describing the scene in the lab to Sandra when the time bomb had disappeared.
The look on Malcolm's face?
She turned to Malcolm, tilting her glass in his direction.
You looked more offended than surprised, and you looked pretty surprised.
Inanimate objects aren't supposed to go off on their own, Malcolm said in his best stuffy professor voice. They do what they're designed to do.
Or not, as it turns out,
Jack grinned across the table.
But what if it hadn't disappeared?
Sandra asked.
It had already appeared at the receiving end. What if the original hadn't gone? Would you just end up with two?
Jack and Malcolm both shrugged at the same time, giving the impression of a coordinated response.
We haven't really gotten that far, Jack said. The math describes the overall universe of 12 dimensions, and from that vantage point, it's irrelevant. There are the number of versions of the device that there always have been and always will be. They just move around.
But we're still working it out, Sandra, and I'm not sure it can be described in any way that can be understood intuitively. You need the math.
Sandra made a face, plainly unhappy with the reply.
And on that subject, we still have to disassemble and troubleshoot the whole setup tomorrow, Jack said to Malcolm. He turned to Diane. Want to come?
No, thanks. I've got some drying paint I need to keep an eye on. Much more exciting.
Jack smiled at his wife and raised his glass in salute. The sending rack lay strewn in pieces across the lab table. Jack and Malcolm worked methodically through the components, checking and testing. Diane had steadfastly refused to get out of bed early on a weekend to watch a couple of geeks play with electronics.
Here we go, Malcolm said into the silence.
What?
Switch mechanism seized. It didn't actually turn off when Diane flipped it. He held up the offending part, demonstrating the switching action, and pointed to the ohm meter, which didn't even twitch.
Not really surprising. We buy our components from the lowest bidder. You have to expect a matching level of quality. Jack shook his head.
Listen, if we ever start building something that could destroy the universe, I'd like to buy the components myself. Can we do that?
Malcolm chuckled and reached into a drawer. Got a replacement here. Let's put this back together.
I'll phone Diane. She'll want to be here if we're going to rerun the experiment.
By mid-afternoon, the sending rack had been reassembled and the experiment was ready to be run. Diane had, as expected, arrived on time to observe. Jack smiled at her and gestured to the time bomb.
Would you like to do the honors?
Sure. So if it destroys the universe, I go first,
Diane replied. Despite her words, she reached unhesitatingly for the switch and flipped it on. A few moments later, a second bomb appeared on the receiving rack. Diane immediately reached for the power switch and flipped it off. However, as she pulled back, her sleeve caught on the toggle and it flipped back to on. The original bomb disappeared from the sending rack.
Fudge,
Diane said and examined her sleeve.
Is anyone noticing a pattern?
As in extreme coincidences?
Diane nodded to Jack.
It's one solution to the grandfather paradox, anyway. Stop twirling your ring.
Jack smirked, but moved his hand away from his wedding band.
Sure, but what's the mechanism to supply these coincidences? It sounds too much like an intelligent architect watching over the time stream. I'd just as soon not get into postulating God to explain observations.
How about Time Lords instead?
That's worse.
While Jack and Diane talked, Malcolm sat down at a laptop and started tapping away. Then he stopped and glared at the screen.
What the living F?
The other two swiveled in his direction.
What?
The counter.
Malcolm pointed to the laptop screen. We've done what, 4 tests total? The counter shows almost 400,000 jumps.
That can't...
Jack walked over and peered at the screen.
Huh. I thought you checked everything. Consider the possibility that it's accurate,
Diane said.
Consider this chain of events. We decide we're going to force a paradox by doing the opposite of what we should. So when the time bomb appears on the receiving rack, we decide not to send it back, which means it doesn't appear, which means we do send it back, which means it does appear, and so on. But what if each iteration happens sequentially in some way? Whatever that means in a time travel scenario. And if so, wouldn't that imply that each iteration isn't necessarily identical?
Jack nodded slowly, working through the implications. So the loop would continue until something happened to break it. It might have taken thousands of iterations before your sleeve caught and ended the loop.
400,000, Malcolm said. I reset it, remember?
But even if each iteration is a separate event, they're starting from the same initial conditions, aren't they?
Jack continued.
If we assume that the loop starts when the time bomb appears in the receiving rack, then events should only start to diverge from that point.
It was just a sleeve, Jack,
Diane said.
But what is the source of the change?
Quantum uncertainty?
Jack shrugged.
As good an explanation as any. And if the iterations are physically different sequences of event, which they'd have to be if they can change, it implies that there's some kind of uber time dimension in which time loops can happen before and after each other.
A contemplative silence settled over the group, each person simply staring at the laptop screen. Finally, Diane said,
"Let's sleep on this. We can review tomorrow. Maybe someone will have a revelation of some kind."
Jack and Diane walked into the lab the next morning hand in hand. Each was carrying a disposable cup of coffee from their favorite vendor. Malcolm waited at the lab table, his own coffee steaming in front of him. Jack and Diane sat across the table and spent a few seconds absorbing caffeine.
"Any thoughts?"
Diane asked. "Yes, let's do the same test again," but Malcolm pulled out a permanent marker. "When the time bomb appears in the receiver, we're going to mark it." He tossed the marker to Jack. Without another word, they moved to the sending rack. Malcolm reached out and went through the startup sequence. A few seconds later, a version of the time bomb appeared on the receiving rack, covered with what appeared to be black stripes. Malcolm immediately reached out and switched off the timer. The three scientists turned back to the receiving rack, and Jack was just opening his mouth to comment on its appearance when the entire building shook. A piece of plaster dislodged from the ceiling and landed square on the timer switch. The time bomb on the sending rack disappeared.
"You've got to be kidding me,"
Diane exclaimed. Jack gestured toward the device on the receiving rack. The apparent stripes were actually marker strokes, in typical groups of five, covering the entire side of the time bomb. Just at the bottom, where the curvature of the device took its surface out of sight, the word etc. was scrawled. Jack pointed to it.
"That's my handwriting."
Diane had moved to the window.
"I found the source of the shaking. Looks like someone lost control of their car and rammed the building. There are people all over the place down there. I hope no one was hurt."
"According to the counter, that took just over 150,000 iterations," Malcolm said, gesturing at the laptop's screen. There was silence for a few seconds.
"Did we cause that accident?"
Diane asked.
"Are we responsible if someone was injured?"
Jack shook his head.
"I don't see how. It was a random event. That's the whole point, I think." "But it wouldn't have happened if we hadn't been trying to prevent the last launch. We don't know that.
What if it was going to happen anyway, but the time stream rearranged things so that we picked that moment to try the experiment? We're sure something changes to make sure the launch happens, but we don't know specifically what changes."
Diane stared at the time bomb for a few moments.
"How about this? Record a 2-hour period watching for unusual events like floods, plagues of locusts, or careening automobiles. Send the time bomb with the recording back 2 hours. Then our past selves will run the usual test within that 2-hour period. We'll put a cover over the switch or something to make it really hard to switch it back on."
Jack glanced at Malcolm and nodded.
"And we'll see if something unusual happens that didn't happen the first time around. If so, we caused it."
"Sounds good," Malcolm said. "I'll get that cover built." Malcolm flipped the plastic cover up and down a few times. "It's not like armor or anything, but it will work against sleeves and pieces of ceiling." He looked up. "Small ones, anyway."
"Anything big enough to smash the cover will smash the equipment as well, I think,"
Diane said.
"So, the plan is we record everything for 2 hours, then send the time bomb back. Our past selves will use that information to determine what's being changed to avoid a paradox."
"Then we will cease to exist," Jack said.
"No, we'll just have different memories."
"What about multiple timelines?" Malcolm asked.
"If that was the case,
You'd think we'd get bombs from multiple pasts.
Unless the timelines are completely isolated with their own pasts as well.
If they're inaccessible and can't affect us, Diane said, I don't think it matters. We deal with what we can perceive.
Malcolm nodded. He flipped up the plexiglass cover, hit the switch, and flipped the cover down. So now we wait for the 2-hour bomb. A device appeared on the receiving rack.
Damn, that was fast, Jack said.
Robert laughed.
Well, that's a wonderful thing about time travel, no waiting.
Let's see what the next 2 hours looks like, Jack said.
The three men gathered around the laptop. Jack clicked on the video icon, and a window popped up showing the lab. The viewpoint had been carefully chosen to show a wall clock in the background. In the foreground, two men and a woman self-consciously tried not to look at the camera. Several seconds of charged silence passed before Jack pointed.
There's me, and there's Malcolm, but who is she? And why do I have my arm around her?
Malcolm glanced at Robert. And where are you? Robert was staring at the video, his eyes wide, and an expression of shock or fear on his face.
I recognize her.
Professor Diane Keeling. She was hired to be the math chair, but she was killed in a car accident the day before she was supposed to start. I was actually the second choice for the position. After her death, they called me up and offered me the job.
And you seem to know her very well, Jack, Malcolm said. In the video, Jack and the woman were now engaged in some poorly concealed PDA. Malcolm hit pause.
Is that a ring on your finger?
Jack squinted at the video window, then tapped the full screen icon. Sure enough, there appeared to be a gold band on his left hand. He looked down at his unadorned hand, then back at the frozen image.
Oh, hell.
Jack sat slumped in his desk chair, staring into space. Robert and Malcolm tried to avoid looking directly at him.
So, I killed my wife?
Jack finally said.
That's a little melodramatic, I think, Malcolm said. Sorry, that was unkind. But no, you didn't do that. But it looks like the time stream has healed itself of our latest experiment by eliminating the person who, I assume, designed that experiment. Or at least suggested it.
But she died a year ago. That's long before we built the equipment.
We can't send the time bomb back to before we built the receiver, true, but perhaps the time stream is not so constrained. If changes can propagate backwards to heal a paradox, there's no reason they can't go as far back as necessary to form a solution.
This solution seems a little excessive, Robert said, then grimaced.
Sorry, too flippant, but still. Surely there must have been something simpler.
But maybe not more likely, Malcolm replied. Perhaps the healing is based only on probability. Maybe a year ago, she barely avoided an accident. Maybe it only took a slight change, a fraction of a second looking in the wrong direction, to make this happen.
I was married, Jack said. And happily, apparently.
He looked up, finally, to meet his friend's eyes.
What have I done?
Can we undo this?
Robert said.
Of more immediate concern, should we send the time bomb back? Malcolm asked. We have less than an hour to decide.
Jack frowned and seemed to come back completely to the present.
If we don't, we'll generate another paradox and consequent attempt at healing. That could make things worse. What if we lose the video and I forget Diane completely?
And if we do send it back, we might cement this reality, Malcolm said.
He glanced at Robert. Thoughts?
When I was offered this position, I was on the last year of my contract with my former employer, and you know what the job market is like these days for academics.
Robert finally met Jack's eyes.
And now I'm engaged to Sandra. If we go back to your reality, I lose mine.
An awkward silence descended on the trio.
But Sandra isn't dead, Jack finally said. This isn't quite a symmetrical situation. I know it's self-serving to point that out, but I don't see any way to compromise on this.
Jack and Robert locked gazes. It wasn't quite mutual glaring, but no one would call it friendly.
On the other hand,
Robert replied,
you have no personal memory of your marriage. It's only because of the video that you know about it at all.
My relationship is, he pointed to his heart,
right here.
So what do we do, flip a coin?
What if we make it worse? Robert argued. What if one of us dies? What if I lose Sandra and you don't get Diane back? Robert stood and began to pace back and forth. He stopped and faced Jack.
I can't. I just can't. I can't help you.
Jack stood.
So you'll do what?
Robert's eyes grew wide at the implied challenge.
No, nothing like that. I just won't help, but I also won't interfere.
With that, he turned and left the room. Which leaves the question of what to do, Malcolm said into the awkward silence.
Can't we just send the time bomb back to before we started and tell ourselves not to do it?
Malcolm shook his head. That is now a past in which your wife has already died. We have to somehow make her death less likely than another outcome. Jack looked down at his hand and ran his fingers around the fourth finger of his left hand. The skin was evenly tanned, with no pale band where a ring might have been in another reality.
That seems like a tall order.
If this was God or a Time Lord or something, I'd at least have someone to rail against. As it is, I might as well curse the wind. Malcolm frowned.
We have to make Diane the only solution to a time paradox. We could just...
What?
Send the time bomb back with a note on it that if Diane isn't there and you two aren't married, to keep sending it back and continue the paradox.
And hope it doesn't get resolved by the building collapsing on us. That would be a more proximate solution.
Good point. Malcolm lapsed back into silence.
After a while, Jack looked up.
Look, I know the time stream, or whatever we want to call it, isn't conscious. It doesn't have a will. It doesn't make decisions, and we shouldn't anthropomorphize it. But maybe we should actually do just that, because the outcomes really are similar to what you'd get with conscious planning, except that it doesn't have an ego, so it will always take the path of least resistance. It won't actively work to frustrate our intentions, never mind all the Murphy jokes.
Like a lazy god, Malcolm replied.
Yeah, a lazy god that doesn't really care. So we have to set things up so that bringing Diane back is the easiest way out.
We covered that.
But without rubbing us out being the easier outcome.
I'm certainly in favor of that.
Jack smiled briefly.
So a poison pill of some kind is necessary. If we die, the plans and an explanation go out to every physics lab in the country with instructions on how to create a paradox and a request to do so.
Repeatedly.
Jack, it isn't alive. You can't threaten it like that. It's like evolution. No planning, just stochastic outcomes based on the current state.
Except that evolution doesn't work toward a predetermined goal. The time stream does. It will keep trying, whatever that means, for a process with no actual will until it arrives at a non-paradoxical solution. So we have to make the paradoxical situation more than simply a threat.
We're going to have to die at least once.
Malcolm stared at Jack. What are you talking about, Willis?
We have to make the outcome from us dying part of the loop, which means we don't avoid that outcome, we invite it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I can do this myself.
Malcolm opened his mouth a few times before replying.
That may be literally true. The logic doesn't require both of us to die if the poison pill is triggered by just you dying.
Jack grinned at him.
Nicely played, but true.
But first we have a decision to make. Do we continue the current paradox, or do we send back the time bomb?
Jack thought for a moment.
Simplify. Send it back. Get rid of that complication. It also removes the possibility of a paradox solution that causes me to forget entirely.
Jack made a helpless gesture with his hands.
Okay, let's do that. Then we'll work on ways to kill you.
Malcolm gestured to the sending rack.
So this is what we have. If the time bomb appears in the receiving rack, you will receive a fatal shock to your heart through these. He held up a couple of medical ECG pads. If no bomb appears, you will flip the switch, thereby sending it back
and killing your earlier self so you can't send it back. Either way, as soon as you die, the poison pill requirements will be enacted. Labs all across the country will receive the plans and instructions, and the time stream will begin to look like a bowl of spaghetti.
And if the time stream tries to resolve the paradox in some other way, say by permanently incapacitating me, you'll send the plans out anyway,
Jack replied. Yep. And I'll be physically elsewhere so it can't take me out at the same time.
Unless an asteroid picks that moment to visit.
Malcolm closed his eyes for a moment.
Jesus! Shut the hell up, okay?
Sorry. So this loop will continue until Diana's back. That's the theory, anyway.
You know this could go really, really wrong, Jack.
Maybe, but I don't think so. Like I said before, no ego. It'll simply go for the simplest resolution. There's nothing with a motive to frustrate our plan, and once Diana's back, I'm going to bury this research and never speak of it again. Which, come to think of it, will simplify the time stream even more.
Malcolm sighed. Then let's do this. Diane goggled at the message taped to the side of the time bomb.
If Diane is there and married to Jack, stop experiment, otherwise continue, see inside.
She glared at Jack.
Is this one of your practical jokes?
He shook his head slowly, staring at the envelope.
Although it is, once again, my handwriting. Perhaps we should open the envelope.
Matching actions to words, Jack carefully cut the tape, holding the envelope to the time bomb. Then he held the unopened envelope to the side of his head and opened his mouth.
Do not even.
Diane's glare was more than enough to underscore her statement. Jack grinned at her, glanced at Malcolm, and opened the sheet of paper inside. He spent several seconds reading it, his jaw slowly dropping. Finally, he put the letter down and stared at Diane for several seconds, twirling the ring on his finger.
What?
She fairly snarled the word.
Do you know someone named Robert Murdoch? Yes. He was the second choice for my job. He's actually contacted me recently about any open positions. His contract expired recently and wasn't renewed.
She shrugged.
You know how it is with the job market for academics these days.
Hire him, Jack said. Find a spot. Anything. He glanced down at the letter.
And introduce him to Sandra. I have a feeling they'll get along.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Feedback, written by Dennis E. Taylor, performed by Ray Porter. Executive producers Catherine Stewart and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambricks. Copyright 2020 by Dennis E. Taylor. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.